This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Summertime, right around the corner. Yeah, I like this one. This is a good jam. Definitely top shelf.
Absolutely.
Back on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. Welcome in. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. And some rain and lightning earlier. We got a little bit of a clearing now, but I think it's supposed to come back in the next 30 to 45 minutes. It was a little dangerous out there. Joining us now on the guest line is our good friend Jared Sutton, former Missouri Tiger great, the pride of Oak Park High School. Jared, I know you like to go running downtown. Hopefully you got it in before the lightning bolt started landing.
Yeah, I actually, I was thinking about that this morning. I'm used to the sunshine shining through here downtown, but it's a little gloomy, and I was thinking about going for a run. I don't know if I'll be doing that today. So, by the way, tip of the cat, too, to Chris for opening up the show with a beautiful song, too. That kind of brought me back. One of my favorites.
I love it. That song's what, about probably 12, 13 years old? Maybe?
It's longer than that.
Right. Longer than
it's
that?
I'm early, mid-90s.
Okay. Yeah, good stuff. Absolutely. We had a lightning strike that was pretty close to the radio station that knocked us out for about 2 or 3 seconds, and that was a little... It was a little nerve-wracking for me because it crackled through my headphones. So,
good way to start the show, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It got my attention, I'll tell you that. All right, Jarrett, let's talk a little NBA playoffs here. We'll start with, the game tonight. We'll start with Warriors Trailblazers. Warriors up 2-0 in the series. And look, I thought the Trailblazers might hang a little bit. In fact, I thought they were going to win game two when they were up 17. But if the Trailblazers cannot close out with a 17-point lead, I don't think they have much chance to get this to even a game five.
Yeah, I agree. I think they let one slip away in game two. And, you know, this Golden State team, so much was made of Kevin Durant, you know, his injury and not being able to play, and Steve Kerr coming out and basically saying that he's probably not going to play in this series. And I think Kevin Durant's injury is a little bit more extreme than what we might have thought originally. I still think it's a little bit worse than what we thought. But you look at Portland, you look at the stat sheet too. I went back after the game and looked at the box score. And if you're Portland, it's everything you would want. You forced Golden State into 16 turnovers, which is a good sign. If you can turn Golden State over in their own building, that's a great start. And then outside of that, you look at the three-point shooting. Portland shot 46% from three and held Golden State to 31%. You'll take that. And so I look at the box score, too. They got great production from Seth Curry, the brother of Steph Curry,
yep.
Who I had an opportunity to coach at Golden State with Santa Cruz a few years back. It was great to see him play so well, pick Steph's pocket a couple times.
Yes, he did.
But you look at this. I mean, having that big of a lead, you knew Golden State comes out in the third quarter, right? That's what they've done historically, even back before Durant. This Warriors team is great in the third quarter, right? They get a lot of energy. They come out. They want to start half. And they took the fight to Portland and came out. It's like Thompson got hot. Steph got hot. And when they start firing on all cylinders, and so a lot is made of Draymond Green, but another guy I'll throw at you is Kevin Looney.
Yes.
You know, a guy that was off the bench.
Terrific.
Great. He was +8. He was 6-6 from the field. And they find ways to close games. It's a championship pedigree. You know, teams that have been there, that know how to win, that know how to close games out, they find a way to do it. It just kind of seems like an art form right now with Golden State, and they find a way to win game two. And look, 2-0 comfortable lead, and Steph's playing with a ton of confidence. And if I'm the Warriors, I go as long as you can without having to play Kevin Durant until maybe the finals.
I absolutely agree. We're speaking with Jarrett Sutton here, NBA playoffs. We'll also get into the draft. Jarrett, when I watch Golden State, and look, I'm a Warriors fan. I'm not one of the people who sits around and, oh, they have all the good players. They win too much. I like watching them play basketball. The ball movement, to me, is off the charts. It's so quick, defenses just can't catch up. And if you're a half a step behind, they throw a three in your face. But, you know, when folks want to make the argument that, you know, they're too good, they win too much, they have all the best players, I pointed this out on Twitter a few days ago, you know, Sean Livingston was almost out of the league. His leg was destroyed. And Golden State said, we'll give you a chance. There might be something there for us. You could help us out. Andre Iguodala has been with a number of teams and some really good teams. Anybody could have signed him. And so I'm looking at some of these more, I guess, supporting role players who I think are really good. And Iguodala is getting a start in this series. But I think they have really good support players, and they don't really slip too much when their starters come out.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you look at their roster, and I will start with Andre Iguodala. He's probably my favorite player.
Absolutely.
With the Warriors and just how he carries himself. And, I mean, we're talking about a guy that was a star in Philadelphia with the 76ers. You know, he was a one option at one point early on in his career, and he was a dynamic player. And now he's in a different phase of his career, right? But his hands defensively are some of the best hands I've seen in basketball. It's not just the NBA. But his ability, and you look back on past series they've won in the playoffs, right, or past games they've won where they absolutely needed to stop. The games against Cleveland when he's guarding Kyrie Irving, he is their best defender, and he's been doing it for so long. But he is such an unselfish guy, and he keeps that locker room together. You know, it's so much is made of Durant and Steph and Clay and Draymond, and deservedly so, right? I still think there's a place for Draymond Green. I think Draymond it flourishes in this system for a reason. But Andre Iguodala keeps this team together and locked in and firing on all cylinders because of his personality. He just keeps everything together. I think with Draymond, you know, I'm big on how Draymond has somewhat changed how we view big men. And Draymond can play the five and the four, but Draymond is a passing forward, and I love that about him. He plays with so much reckless abandon. He's a physical presence. He plays with a ton of emotion that can get him in trouble. I think there's a lot of people, I think even Steve Kerr would admit to this as well, that sometimes it does bother you. It gets old. He puts himself in bad situations. He gets technical fouls. We saw it actually play an impact when they lost that lead to LeBron and the Cavs with the technical fouls that ultimately ended in the suspension. But you love what he does as a forward and the ability to pass the ball. And if you watch Golden State play, they make such quick decisions. I mean, the gaps are open. It's a catch, jump shot, one dribble, put it on the floor, pass, move the ball. But it starts with Draymond Green because Draymond isn't looking to score, right? He's not an offensive player, really. He's more of a guy that can play off of a guy like Clay and Steph. When you got so many great shooters, you have other guys that just have to be able to finish around the rim. And so many times they run pin-down screens, they run flare screens, they run diagonal Iverson cuts, and they'll get wide-open dunks with Iguodala and Draymond Green because two or three guys are chasing Clay and Steph off screen. That's just how good they are, and that's where the game has evolved with the three-point shot. We got two guys that are Hall of Fame shooters, and Steph and Clay, the best three-point shooting team we've seen arguably ever. The way Portland guarded him in Game 1 was an embarrassment. It was just lackadaisical.
It was stunning how sloppy it was.
It was almost like Steph Curry. I know you won't say this, but that has to be one of the easiest games he's played, not just in the playoffs, but even in the regular season. I mean, he's coming off screens, eating a sandwich wide open from three, and it was just Portland had no ability to guard the perimeter, and they were better in Game 2. We'll see how they play at home. But you're right, Brad. This Golden State team, if you're a fan of basketball, watch them move the ball. Watch them play with unselfishness. But it starts with the mentality and the attitude of that team, and it's Andre Iguodala and Draymond Green that are so unselfish, and they know their job is to get Steph and Clay open and get them shots, as well as Durant when he's healthy.
We're speaking with Jarrett Sutton, NBA scout, and also an analyst for the SEC Network, talking some NBA playoffs. You mentioned Draymond, and I'll point this out for the whole team as well. Draymond had 10 rebounds in Game 2. All of them were on defense, and that's one of the things that I may have texted you the other night. I don't remember. Is Portland ever going to get a rebound? They seem disinterested in crashing the boards, or Golden State's just that much better at getting to the spot?
Yeah, and I think it's little details. Again, it gets back to closing games, winning games. And, yes, Golden State is a great three-point shooting team. They're a great offensive team. They're a highlight reel with some of their players, with Clay and Steph and KD. But, I mean, I go back to Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, and I will put Kevon Looney in this conversation, and Jordan Bell. Jordan Bell was the guy that had great minutes the other night. And they're playing a lot of guys. Steve Kerr talked about this, that when you look at the series against Houston – they kept their rotation pretty small, and they kept to their star guys. They had a few guys come off the bench, but they knew in that series it was going to be about the stars. And in this series, it's much more about playing with depth. And I think that's kind of where they're at right now, is being able to play multiple players, multiple positions, giving Clay and Steph a blow, giving them some time. They still played a lot of minutes, but you're getting more into your rotation. Kevon Looney played 29 minutes the other night. Those guys bring a level of toughness because they know when they go in the game, they don't have to focus on scoring. I think that's different with some other teams where your big men, you count on them to score, be able to play from the perimeter. And with Golden State, yeah, you'd love to have, you know, Draymond making three-point shots. He's not a three-point shooter. He really struggles, but he will make a few on occasion. But you just want Jordan Bell, Jarebko, Looney, those guys just have to come in and focus on doing little things, and that is rebounding. That is playing defense. That is knowing the scouting report, knowing assignments. And so much is made, again, about defense being played in the NBA. Golden State does it flawlessly. I think Steph can struggle defensively, but they got Klay Thompson, Iguodala that set the tone. But then Draymond Green and Looney and Jarebko have shown that they can play good minutes. Bell can play good minutes defensively. So it's not just so much, again, the scoring. You touched on that great point. Rebounding is important. But when you got Jarebko getting 7 and Looney getting 7 off the bench and they're playing 15 to 20 minutes, that's a good sign. And that, to me, is they're adding that production. They're in that plus column of the plus-minus scale, and that's where you want them to be. And that's what leads to winning. When your role players step up and do other things that show up on a stat sheet, that's not just scoring.
We're speaking with Jared Sutton, talking NBA playoffs. We'll get into the NBA draft as well, but let's flip over to the Eastern Conference, Bucks and Raptors. Bucks up 2-0, just like the West, and the last game, the Bucks just dropped the hammer on. Look, I love watching Giannis play basketball, and I just mark him down for 30 points every night, and if he gets a few more, great. But, you know, Giannis is going to get all the attention. Chris Middleton has been a good player for a long time. Mirotic is having a good season, but you look in their box score as well, and off the bench, they get Ayasova for 17 points. He was plus 22. You get Hill off the bench for 13 points. You get Brogdon off the bench for 14 points. A little bit Warriors-like in that they're getting production from a lot of different places.
Yeah, they are. And I think the acquisition of George Hill and Malcolm Brogdon's been a guy that they've had, and he's been coming back from injury, and he's been just sort of kind of getting more acclimated, and he was very good. He was plus 15 the other night, and so that, I think that is kind of a good sign for them, right? He's a focal point for them. He's one of their better players. He's coming off the bench, giving them great production. But Ilyasova was a guy that I was really actually excited for them getting him from Philadelphia because he is a great big man, and he is great at scoring the basketball. He can step out and shoot the three-point shot. Very versatile, fluid, mobile big man, and he showed that in Philadelphia. That's a great get for Milwaukee. And then, oh, by the way, they signed Brook Lopez. And I know Brook didn't play well last night, but he had a great game one, and I felt did pretty much everything for Milwaukee in that game. And I think the Raptors are kicking themselves on game one, as we talked about with Portland letting go of the rope in game two. I think Toronto did that in game one, and I think game two. Look, Milwaukee's a special team, and yes, it starts with Giannis. But yes, Chris Middleton is such a great story. Eric Bledsoe has been really good. They got so much depth and weapons, and I think they can go to 8-9 guys. I mean, DJ Wilson hasn't played a lot. DJ Wilson's a really good player for them. You know, he hasn't played a lot, but he's a guy that could come in and step up and make some plays. But they focus on Brogdon, on Hill, and Ilyasova coming off the bench, and they stick to those main guys. Mirotic is a good get for them. He had 15 and 6 the other night. Again, you talk about where we're at with this era of three-point shooting. The Bucks shot 41 threes the other night, and they only shot 32%, but they're stretching the floor. And to me, when you're shooting a lot of three-point shots, defenses have to guard the three-point line. They have to lock and chase. They have to be able to have a presence on the perimeter, and that opens up Giannis at the top of the circle, being able to put the ball on the floor and get to the rim, draw fouls. And that's just kind of how they orchestrate offense. They put Giannis. Coach Bud does a great job of getting Giannis in space. And then defensively, same thing we talked about with Golden State. This Milwaukee team is a very good underrated defensive team because they protect the rim. They force the Raptors into three-point shots or long two-point shots in the pick and roll. They do a great job when they guard the perimeter and guard the pick and roll. They do not give up dribble penetration. They don't let that primary ball handler turn the corner. They take away the airspace, and they don't allow people to get to the rim, and they force outside twos. And that's not a great shot in basketball. I still think the two-point shot, the mid-range, is still alive. But you talk about teams that are going to probably be in the finals. They're three-point shooters. They have rim protection, and they have a guy that can get to the rim and a star, superstar talent like a Giannis, like a Durant, like a Steph. and you got to have guys that make plays. Yes, Kawhi Leonard is that. He really struggled in game one. I thought he played really well in game two. But Pascal Siakam has been inconsistent, and Pascal Siakam is one of their better players. He's been up and down. Lowry played well in game one, played pretty well in game two, but they still need him to be more productive on the offensive end. And Danny Green's got to step up and be consistent and take some more shots and get open on the three-point line because he's just not getting open right now, and that's really hurt Toronto in the series.
All right, you're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show, and Jarrett Sutton is our guest talking NBA playoffs. And then we'll get to the draft. One final thing for you. I'm just gonna pencil in the Warriors. I'm not really counting on Portland coming back in that series. Maybe they get to a fifth game. I don't know, but I'm gonna pencil in the Warriors. Do the Bucks or Raptors have the better chance to challenge Golden State to maybe get them into a Game 6 or Game 7 situation in the finals?
I think it's the Bucks, and I honestly think the Bucks have a better chance than probably people are giving them to win this NBA championship. I think if there is a team that could knock off the Warriors, it would be the Bucks. I still don't think right now anybody's going to beat the Warriors, even with or without Kevin Durant, just because of the way Golden State, as we saw in Game 2 against Portland, they can not have a game where they play well, and Steve Kerr said this. Look, Portland outplayed Golden State in Game 2, but Golden State found a way to steal that game. That's what Golden State does, and that's what good teams do. And that's why I still like Golden State to win it all. But I do think the Bucks can compete, and I do think it would be a terrific series with Milwaukee and with Golden State. I could see that going 6-7 games, and I think that's what we're wanting. I think we want a team that can challenge Golden State, and I think it's Milwaukee. Raptors are a really good team. Kawhi has had a incredible year and a great playoff, but he is a guy that needs a lot more help, and I think with Milwaukee, as you touched on, they got more depth, they got more pieces, and they got more guys that have been more consistent.
All right, Jarrett Sutton, NBA scout and analyst for the SEC Network. We'll let you put on your scouting hat right now because I know you travel around the country doing scouting of college players, getting them ready for the NBA, taking a look at just about everybody. First, the NBA draft lottery. This was fun. This was fun when I was a kid, when they would put I think it was before the ping pong balls, they may have put like the placards into a big barrel and turn them over like bingos, like they were playing bingo. That was kind of fun, and we had the Patrick Ewing sweepstakes and all that. I think this has kind of run its course. I'm not sure how the NBA should set this up because some people feel that they're rewarding teams who shouldn't be up that high, or they think the worst team should have the number one pick, but this prevents tanking. I don't really know where I come down on this. I know it's not entertaining anymore. It's not as fun as it used to be.
Well, I think there's been so much. First of all, I was kind of amazed at how much just conversation was centered around this, and I do think it is because of Zion.
Right.
And I do think Zion is a guy we haven't seen, since a LeBron type of player, where he is going to be a very dominant player, I think, in the NBA. And you know, we saw the Pelicans, ticket office. And the season ticket packages that were bought a few hours after.
Yep, like 2,000, right, in the first day?
Yeah. I think it might have been close to 3,000, actually.
Wow.
After that it's so it just goes to show you, for a market, too, that's been getting so much discussion surrounding this Anthony Davis situation. I actually was happy for New Orleans, and I do think it's good for the league that New Orleans and Memphis are 1-2, because I do think it's a conversation the league wants to address about tanking. I don't think it's rigged. I know that's a big conversation, too. I think if it was rigged, you'd see New York and L.A. up there at the top with Zion going to a bigger market. I know Bulls fans are frustrated because they're in the seventh spot, and it seems like they've been there far too often. But, for the lottery, it gets back to, I look at it as teams that have, at the end of the year, shut players down, or we're playing guys from the G League and really trying to look at it as we're going to lose as many games as possible because it's going to help our chances. I do think it helps teams to know, like, just because you're losing games or trying to quote unquote take this tanking method, it doesn't mean you're going to sneak up and get the 1 or 2 overall pick. And I do think too, Brad, I don't like people to say, oh, this draft is not a good draft. And every year there's someone that says, oh, it's a really bad draft. There's only 2-3 top players. And they said this after the draft last year, right? It was a good draft last year, good talent at the top. There was good value there. They said 2019 is not going to be a great draft. Well, here we are. And Zion Williamson and Ja Morant, those are going to be two special players. I mean, Ja Morant is going to be an absolute stud in the NBA. But you look in the first round and in the second round, there's a ton of value. And I'll go with Malcolm Brogdon and Draymond Green, a guy that was drafted late in the first round and then in the second round, two guys that are probably going to be playing in the finals. So you can always find value in this draft. I definitely I don't like when people say, oh, well, this draft only has a certain amount of guys at the top and that's it. Well, that's not actually the case because to me, every team, especially when you're in a lottery, there's a guy that you can get that might be able to change your franchise. So it's an exciting time. It's great for the NBA. I kind of like it in a way that's similar to like the NFL. I'm just kind of used to that. But with the ping pong balls and the lottery, it does bring a little bit of a level of excitement, especially around the NBA combine and around the playoffs.
We're speaking with Jarrett Sutton. I did find it a little. The only thing I found entertaining about the lottery coverage was the New York people were losing their minds because they had to settle for the number 3 overall pick. And I'll just throw out a couple. I think I tweeted this out a week or two ago, and you just pointed this out as well. Draymond Green was like 34 overall in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Klay Thompson
mm-hmm.
was 11 overall. Steph Curry was 7 overall. I mean, those are three guys outside the top 5 that universally changed that franchise. So the New York people that are all weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth need to just grow up a little bit.
And Brad, too, I mean, who's to say every year around this time, it feels like we follow the same level of coverage and the same discussion points and the fan bases, they get so distraught, like the New York Knicks fan base, where you're thinking, well, you still have the number 3 overall pick, and who's to say there's not a trade out there? You know, there's trades that take place going up to the draft, sometimes day of the draft, sometimes an hour before, like what we saw last year with the trade from Atlanta and Dallas that involved Trae Young and Luka Doncic. So it's just because that this you know lottery took place and you're at the 3 spot, there's still so much to play out, too, that we don't know yet. I don't think there will be a trade at the top because I think that's pretty set in stone. But who knows what's going to happen, right? And New Orleans is in an interesting place because they're going to draft Zion Williamson, and I still think they're going to keep Anthony Davis and try to work for it. Anthony Davis can sign that $200 million extension. Now he can sign it today. He can sign it in the fall. He can sign it when he wants to. But I think New Orleans should take a shot at it, and then from there they can make a decision. So it's going to be interesting how that plays out, too, with that organization and then what follows at the top of that draft because there's still so much talent. The Lakers there at 4, they can really get a really good player. And then as that first round, that top 10 falls down, there's still some really good players there.
Speaking with Jarrett Sutton, a couple of final things for you, Jarrett. In relation to Zion Williamson, one of the things I found amusing, not only the Knicks fans just going bananas because they had to settle for number 3, but then they started, reporters were calling Zion's stepdad and asking, well, does he really want to go to New Orleans or will he go back to Duke for another year and wait to get a better team? And he's like, no, we never talked about that. This kid is going to make millions and millions of dollars and living in New Orleans ain't a bad place to make a living.
No, and I will say I've been so impressed with Zion Williamson. I mean, for a guy that is as publicized and as covered as him, as we've seen all season long, right? I mean, Zion Williamson has been everywhere, social media, ESPN, NCAA tournament. He's all anybody wants to talk about, right? He's the conversation around the water cooler for basketball fans. And the way he's carried himself this year has been so impressive, right? After the whole sneaker debacle where his shoe exploded against North Carolina and Barack Obama's
right
there at the game, and it's just so much hype right around the game. And there was these questions about, is he going to just shut it down? And he kind of laughed at that. He said, why would I not play? I want to win a national championship. This is my only chance to go to Duke. I love his responses, and he just seems like a very humble, down-to-earth kid. I do think he's a guy that he probably wanted to go to a different market. There was some conversation of what he was doing in the draft room before the lottery and kind of, you know, discussing with some of the guys there of where he really wanted to go. But he's a professional, I feel like. I think he's already shown that and proven that. And he's going to go to New Orleans. He's going to be excited about that, and he'll carry himself the right way. I mean, he's going to be the number 1 overall pick, and he's got such a bright future. And I do think for Zion, it would be really good for him if him and Anthony Davis hit it off and had some success. I think it would be great for Zion. You're looking at a team that could go win some games. If those two guys are what we think they're going to be capable of being and find a way to play together, I think it would be really exciting for that city. And I do think it would help Zion to get his career started on the right note with another superstar around him, which we talk about all the time. Young players that get around veteran players, You've got people that have been through it, players that have been through it, players that have been used to the hype and the media coverage, and now you're a pro, and now it's about you being a professional, and it's on you now. And I think him getting around Anthony Davis would be really beneficial for him, and I think it would be exciting for New Orleans.
All right, Jared Sutton, we'll wrap up the draft talk with this. I was looking at a couple of mock drafts, and Jarrett Culver from Texas Tech is in the top five of a lot of them. Jackson Hayes from Texas, probably top 10. And a kid with Kansas City ties, Bol Bol, who at one time was at Bishop Miege, and then I think he was at two or three other high schools. I don't know. But he's being projected somewhere in the top 15 going to the Boston Celtics. Look, Bol Bol, as far as I know, doesn't have the greatest work ethic in the world. Are there any concerns in the scouting circles that about him getting to the NBA and not performing the way that they would like him to perform?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. You know, the local ties here and Bol Bol obviously, you know, went out west and signed with Oregon and didn't get to finish the season. But when he was at Oregon, the production he showed and the content that was covered on the floor, his ability to play the game and shoot the basketball at his size, 7'2", you know, you can see why a lot of teams are excited about him. In the scouting process, obviously the intel is the most important thing, right? You want to know what the player is on the floor, but you want to know his background. You want to know what drives him. You want to know if he can, you know, fit into a locker room, if he can fit into a culture that you're wanting out of your team. It is a team by team, case by case basis. And for him, he's an intriguing prospect, right? He's a big kid. He's 7'2". I mean, outside of Taco Fall, he's one of the bigger players in the draft. And he's a guy that can shoot it and play multiple positions, 1 through 5. So I think that, to me, is why teams are going to look at him very much so in that first round, probably the lottery, maybe a little bit out of the lottery. But those are questions you're asking about every player, and those are what questions come up in the NBA Combine process. That's the interview process. Teams know about you. They've seen you. They've seen you in high school. They've seen you in college. They talk to your high school coaches, your college coaches. They know who you are. They know what's in your background. And then they want to get to know you a little bit and see if you've changed. You know, a lot can happen in a year. We've seen good stories of kids in high school. And as we've touched on before, Brad, 15, 16, 17 years old, maybe they've made some mistakes. Hopefully they've grown up when they got to college. Maybe they got into the right system with the right college coach that didn't allow them, you know, to sit back and just kind of coast through the process and really demand it of them, both on and off the floor. That's a whole part of the process. So it is a case-by-case basis. And hopefully for Bol Bol, he's learned a lot over the course of not just his basketball career, but his life as well, to where he knows he's going to be a professional athlete now. And we've seen guys that have been drafted that have really flaked out and tanked out because of situations that they just didn't address in their life that ultimately got them out of the league. And so it's a unique prospect. He's a guy that, again, the talent's there. It's just what's going to be there down the road 2-3 years from now in the NBA. Is he going to be able to handle that, and is he going to be able to work and put the time in to be a great pro?
All right, Jared Sutton, I appreciate you jumping on with us today. I've said this before, but I'd say in the last 5 to 6 years, I've really gotten more back into the NBA. I loved it when I was a kid. I got away from it for a little while and then kind of came back. Maybe part of that was the Golden State and the appeal of watching them, but some other players as well. But it's always fun to talk NBA playoffs and NBA draft, and it'll be exciting to see where some of the guys that you scouted, where they're gonna end up. That'll be a lot of fun.
Thanks, Brad. I actually kind of have to agree with you. When I was in high school and growing up, I was such a college basketball fan. But I tell you, the NBA and where it's at now, the talent that's in the league, the shot-making, the game has evolved so much, so quickly. And it's been so much fun to watch, and maybe one day we're at Sprint Center watching an NBA team in Kansas City. That'd be fun.
Absolutely. I was thinking back to, you know, I used to like watching the Lakers and Celtics go back and forth, but if you threw in a game from, I don't know, 1984, 1985, one of their championship games, and then you watch today's game, it's not even close. You would think, how did they ever play that way? But those were good times, but I'm back into it now, definitely. Yeah.
Right. Brad, you got to miss the rivalries of the 80s, but the talent of the current day,
yes,
the current model of the NBA, it's just too fun.
100% agree with you on that. All right, Jarrett, if you need to get outside and do something, do it now, because the rain is coming back. But have a good weekend. Enjoy the NBA playoffs, and we'll look forward to the draft.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks for having me this morning.
All right, that's Jarrett Sutton, former Missouri basketball star, the pride of Oak Park High School, now an NBA scout, and an analyst for the SEC Network. Whenever he's on the show or if you just if you see him out in public and talk basketball, it's off the charts, his knowledge of the game.
Oozing with knowledge.
Yes.
Oozing with basketball knowledge. And not just in every facet, you know, high school, college, NBA, he has it all.
Yeah. And he knows everybody. I mean, he knows everybody.
He's a scout. he's from the area, and he played at Mizzou, so yeah. he's got a lot of ties.
All kinds of good stuff with Jarrett Sutton. If you want to follow him on Twitter, at Jarrett T. Sutton. That's a lot of T's. At Jarrett T. Sutton. So, good stuff. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, maybe we'll bounce around a couple of ideas that we talked about with Jarrett there. And then coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, Nicholas Mendola will join us. We'll talk a little Sporting KC as they play Vancouver tonight at 7:30 right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll also talk about Bruce Arena coming back to Major League Soccer. All that and more still to come. You're on Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. The way it is.
Come on.
Sometimes you can remake a song and it goes very poorly. Sometimes you can do it like this, where it goes really well. That's a good. Not a cover. It's borrowing a hook from another song, borrowing from Bruce Hornsby in the Range.
Yes. But Tupac did a phenomenal job of, you know, bringing out, you know, certain truths that were going on. You know.
Yeah. Quick thing, just to follow up from what we talked about with Jarrett Sutton, the draft is coming up, NBA draft. And Chris, I know one of your favorite players in the NCAA tournament, which we talked about a lot, was Taco Fall. How do you think he fits into the NBA? Do you have to answer that phone? Okay. How do you think Taco Fall fits into the NBA? Is he 7'4"?
Taco Fall, I think 7'2" or 7'4". No, I think it actually was either 7'4" or 7'5".
Mm-hmm.
He had an 8-foot 2-inch wingspan, I believe.
There's a place for him. I'm just not sure.
And a standing reach of 10'2".
It's just ridiculous.
Man. And he's a guy that he's not going to play more than 25 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Probably. I would cap it at that. But when he is on the court, he's a huge presence, he's not terrible on the offensive end. He has good touch around the basket.
Right.
He can't shoot a free throw, so it might turn into a hack a Shaq situation when he is on the floor. But Taco Fall is just you saw it in the NCAA tournament when he is on the floor, just standing with his arms up, altering shots
right
in the lane. The problem you'll have though in the NBA with Taco is just, how will he do when he has to go against a stretch five that will
right
take you out to the three-point line? That's going to be a huge problem because that's what the NBA is turning into. It's a positionless league. There's no positions. I mean, Joel Embiid shooting threes. DeMarcus Cousins can even shoot threes.
Mm-hmm.
All of these guys are expanding their game to not what it was in the 90s where you had
right
your back-to-the-basket post players.
Right.
And there is defensive 3 seconds in the NBA. So that also is a huge problem for Taco because mm-hmm you can't just post up in the lane.
Right.
There are teams that do play zone defense in the NBA. It's not as it is there. It doesn't look as – it's not like you would see it in the college game just because of what I alluded to earlier with the NBA having a defensive 3 second
right
rule. So it's pretty interesting to think about, just because there will be a team that will
yeah
take him. There will be a team with that kind of height, length, and ability to just stand and dunk the ball without even jumping. There is some use for that, at least for 20, maybe 25 minutes a night.
On that note, we'll transition to the Chiefs real quick. We didn't get into the Chiefs a lot earlier in the show, but we did want to kick around a couple of things. Chiefs and Jets, there's two things here. One, I can't figure out what the Jets are doing. How do you get through a draft and then decide your general manager is not a good fit? Although I guess the Chiefs did that with John Dorsey, right? I don't get what the Jets are doing. I never have. They've been just bad for so long. So they fire the GM because apparently Adam Gase won the battle. coach didn't sign off on him, fire the GM. Now the, I guess the interim decided to make a trade, wanted to get rid of Darren Lee, send him to the Chiefs for a sixth-round pick. That's a sixth-round pick. That's a pretty good bargain for the Chiefs. You give up a very low-round pick for a guy who plays a lot, 2020 sixth-round pick. I was just trying to look at his numbers real quick. Of course, they're not just going to jump up right when I ask for him. But we've seen what Brett Veach has done this offseason, being at how bad the Chiefs' defense has been the last 3 or 4 years, 5 years. And he's just wheeling and dealing. And they have a problem at linebacker. Reggie Ragland isn't the best in the world. In fact, he misses games because he's injured. He did start 15 games last season. You got Anthony Hitchens. He is underperformed because he's probably been playing in the wrong system for his talent level. Dee Ford gone, Justin Houston gone. So Darren Lee for a sixth-round pick. Just another little bump up for the Chiefs improving the defense. The other thing about the Jets, and Chris brought this to my attention this morning, Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio, saying that all of a sudden there's rumors around the league that the Jets are kicking the tires on bringing in Peyton Manning to be part of the front office. And probably not in a GM role, but more of a talent evaluator. That's what ownership wants, is they want a good talent evaluator. I don't think they're going to ask Peyton Manning to start negotiating contracts as a GM. So they're kicking the tires on Peyton Manning. They don't say where any of these rumors started. Just buzz around the league.
I think it came originally from Pro Football Talk. I think Mike Florio.
That's what I'm looking at with
the
Mike Florio's story. So. But he's saying that there's just buzz around the league about this, and I'm wondering where that's coming from. I mean,
well,
the Jets,
you mentioned why would he want to do this? I mean, yes, he has acting opportunities and whatnot. You've seen him in, you know, SNL and commercials and whatnot. But at a certain point, even if you have a ton of money, what are you going to do with? He's still in his mid-40s or early 40s. What is he going to do? He loves the game. He clearly loves football, and he has a mind for it. Whether he wants to be a coach or a front office guy, even though great quarterbacks, like you're seeing with John Elway, have at least of recent, John Elway built that team to win the Super Bowl with a bunch of free agents, but picking other quarterbacks has not been his strong suit. But it would be interesting to see how Peyton Manning, because Peyton Manning's not John Elway. They're completely different, in my opinion.
Right.
But I would be interested to see how this would work if he actually is interested in this and if it ended up happening.
Well, I was trying to think. I was also thinking about the fit. I mean, Peyton Manning has turned down numerous opportunities to do television, to be in the booth. I believe Monday Night Football went after him at one point. Everybody's gone after Peyton Manning to try to get him to do TV, and he clearly is not interested in that. This would be a bit of a different challenge. I wonder if this is more in his wheelhouse, analyzing players, breaking it down, making decisions. But if he were to join the Jets, it would have to be set up, and by the way, he and Adam Gase, the new Jets head coach, were together in Denver when Peyton was at the end of his career. I'm wondering how the division of responsibility and who answers to who would work. Because Peyton Manning would want control over, I'm assuming, everything. Because the organization's been dysfunctional for so long that they're just in a bad place, the Jets. Not that I care. They keep losing. That's fine with me. But Peyton Manning would have to look at the structure of the organization in the front office and tell, what's his name? It's not Woody Johnson, the late Woody Johnson. It's his son who runs the team now, Christopher Johnson. He'd have to have a long conversation with Christopher Johnson about how to run the franchise, what he would need to be able to come in and run that franchise and give them respectability, give them credibility, get them some sort of respect. Because the Jets have been a laughingstock for a long time. They make a lot of bad decisions.
I mean, firing their president of football operations after the draft.
Right. Which I think the Chiefs did with John Dorsey. I think that's how the timing turned out.
It was later. I think it was more into the summer that occurred. It was right after the Jeremy Maclin release,
right.
I believe.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken. But a lot of people are like what the Jets are doing. Some people do. But it still needs to be seen. You know, you get Le'Veon Bell. You have the quarterback, essentially. But where are the other pieces?
Right.
It's gonna be fun to see, especially in the AFC East going up against the Patriots. And I think the Bills are also
a
team to look out for.
I think the Bills are on the rise.
I think they're kind of flying under the radar right now. But
don't have to worry about the Dolphins.
Dolphins, no. Yes. The Dolphins, I don't know. And, you know, they always go back to the point of, or people talking about, you know, the Patriots are in the AFC, so they just dominate the division, and they've had
They beat everybody else, too.
But they beat their... They're above 75% in the win percentage playing against, or at that mark against playoff teams.
Yeah,
through this whole run, so they still beat good teams.
Right. Yeah, it's and I guess part of the part of what went wrong with the GM is the coach didn't want to spend all that money on a running back, and they gave Le'Veon Bell a ton of money, and that was part of the problem. They've handed out what the Jets have handed out the four biggest free agent contracts or signing pool or whatever it is, the number I had it on top of my head. They've given more guaranteed and bonus money out this offseason than anybody else, and it's only on mainly four players. So they're going to be they may be going the right direction now, but they're going to be in a tight situation money wise. But Peyton Manning, I could totally see that, because he is a football nerd. He just is. I'm saying that in a good way. That's the way he functions. He'd have to be reassured that the Jets would get their house in order to take that job. It'd be interesting. I'll say that. It'd be interesting to see Elway and Manning going head to head as general managers. On that note, we will take a quick timeout, and then we'll come back and wrap up hour number two. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll be joined by Nicholas Mandola. We'll talk a little Sporting KC in Vancouver. They'll kick off tonight at 7:30 at Children's Mercy Park in KCK. We'll have it live for you here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll also talk Bruce Arena coming back to Major League Soccer. All that and more still to come. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, who is this?
This is a group called Portugal the Man.
Okay.
They're like an indie alt group.
Yeah.
So they're pretty cool. I like them a lot.
It's Saturday sound. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Welcome back to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. Cranking out 50,000 watts. A little break in the clouds right now, but more heavy rain is coming this afternoon. So stay dry if you're out there. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. We were talking Chiefs and Jets and Peyton Manning. Would he be interested in joining the Jets front office? I did see another signing this week for that's related to Kansas City, one of Kansas City's own. Shane Ray signing with the Baltimore Ravens, a graduate of Bishop Miege High School. He grew up. The Kansas City Star did a great story on him a few years ago about where he grew up. Grew up in the what's called the Murder Factory in Kansas City. Very challenging conditions in which to grow up. If you're living in a neighborhood called the Murder Factory, it's not because it's great. Ended up going to school at Bishop Miege. Tim Grunhardt has raved about Shane Ray for a long time. He was a first-round pick of the Denver Broncos. He was 23rd overall. To the Broncos in 2015. Last year, though, a little bit sideways with the organization. In fact, he was inactive for the final three games, and he said he was healthy. So things did not end well between Shane Ray, John Elway, and the Denver Broncos. And now he's off to the Baltimore Ravens. And so I'm happy for Shane Ray, because I think he's a solid dude, and he's going to an organization that, as he says, turns out great pass rusher, easy for me to say, great pass rusher after a great pass rusher. And so Shane Ray is going to get in the Baltimore Ravens defense. He's going to get baptized into their system and hopefully has some more good years in the National Football League. I'd like to see him make a ton of money before he gets done playing football.
Yeah, it's always fun to, as we always, you talk about Kansas City guys.
Yeah.
Shane Ray getting it done in the NFL. Fun stuff. I thought the Chiefs might look at it.
That's what I was just going to say. Yeah.
But I don't know. There has been some injury concerns with him. So I understand why you maybe not don't want to go after that just with the past injuries. So it's going to be interesting. Hopefully he doesn't kill the Chiefs when the Ravens play the Chiefs this year. Hopefully he's not on top of Patrick Mahomes all game. So
when do we see the first story from the Baltimore Sun talking about Shane Ray having a Chiefs tattoo? Because that was a big story in Denver. He showed up with a Chiefs tattoo. He's like,
I forgot he had that.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
So I'm wondering, the Ravens, what is it, the Baltimore Sun? There's probably a couple of newspapers up there. I'm wondering when we see the first article. Oh, can you believe Shane Ray has a Chiefs tattoo and he plays for the Ravens? It'll happen. Or some sports talk schmuck. We'll turn it into something that it's not. Grew up in Kansas City. I probably would not have gotten a Chiefs tattoo if I was going to the National Football League. Didn't know where I was going, but he grew up in Kansas City. I totally get it.
KC guy.
Totally get it. Remember Eddie Kennison had, former Chiefs receiver, he had the helmets of every team he had played for down, I don't know if it was the inside of his arm, outside of the arm. So he had 5 or 6 different helmets tattooed on his arm.
Eddie Kennison, the throwback, I mean, for me at least, when I was little and started really getting into the Chiefs, him and Johnny Morton.
Yeah. I liked Eddie Kennison. I thought he was a super good dude, and I know there were some things that didn't work out with the Rams, and so Dick Vermeil said, give you another chance here in Kansas City. He's a very good player, and I still see Eddie around once in a while. It's probably been a few months, but he and his wife do great work for charity in this town. Eddie Kennison is always at this function or that function, so good little throwback. I wasn't planning on talking about Eddie Kennison today, but tattoos led to Eddie Kennison, so he had the helmets of all of his teams down his arm, which was kind of funny. It's all right.
So where are you at this point with the Chiefs?
I like almost everything they've done this offseason. I thought the draft was really good. The guys they brought in to help the defense, solid moves. It's spent a lot of money to get a new pass rusher, but...
Yeah, but it's a front-loaded deal for the most part. So basically it's only a 3-year deal for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So after the third year, you can get out of that.
I think Brett Veach looked at what he had. He probably should have addressed this sooner, but, he made moves last year to get improvement on the defense. They didn't work out. He looked at what he had, and he said, now I have to make some serious moves. We got to, cut some people. We got to trade some people, and that's just the way it's got to go. But I like almost everything they've done. Now, the under-the-radar guys, I don't know yet, but I like what they've done. I like what they addressed in the draft, and I like what they've addressed in free agency and through trades. All good stuff. All right, we are coming up on a timeout here. Coming up in the next hour, Nicholas Mendola will join us from NBCSports.com. We'll talk a little Sporting KC. We'll talk about Bruce Arena getting back into Major League Soccer and maybe the U.S. National Team as well. Always like to cover a little bit of everything. So that's coming up next. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Boleg is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.